Is traditional metal making a comeback? We'll find out on this edition of Chris Akin Presents.
Chris Akin Presents, and I, of course, am Chris Akin, and I am joined today by from Live and Loud with the Lord. We've got the Lord himself, Lord Nelson. How you doing, man? And the reason we are together is to talk about Iron Flame, a band that we are both digging big time. You have a brand new release coming out called Where Madness Dwells. Comes out on July 1st, and to talk about it is the singer of the band and the singer of a lot of bands, or a performer in a lot of bands, Mr. Andrew DeCagna. Andrew, how are you, man?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Excellent,
doing
man.
Well, Andrew. Yeah.
Well, Andrew, I got to tell you, man, it's great to talk to you, man, and it is great to talk to somebody that is well-versed in the different styles of metal, because too many times we both talk to bands and they're really, I don't want to say they're limited because that's not really fair, but they don't have a range to grow from.
Gotcha.
Where you, I mean, obviously doing some black metal stuff and some power metal stuff and some modern metal stuff, you kind of have a lot of different ideas that you can use. So let's start there, man, and talk a little bit about you as a musician. And specifically, how do you decide what you're going to use where and what you're going to write for at any given time?
Well, I guess I should start out by saying that of all the projects that I'm in, Iron Flame is really my main creative outlet.
Okay.
In a lot of the other projects that I'm in, although I'm intimately involved in them, I'm more of a working musician.
Okay.
In them, and less of a songwriter per se. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Iron Flame is my main creative outlet, as it were. But, you know, first and foremost, I'm a 46-year-old kid, man, that grew up listening to heavy metal just like everybody else. And I went through my phases like I think everybody else did. You know, I started out with Iron Maiden and Sabotage and Halloween and Queensryche, and you know, then discovered thrash and went on to Metallica and Anthrax and Overkill and Nuclear Assault, and then, you know, then death metal came, and then I discovered all the Scandinavian death metal bands and all the Floridian death metal bands, and I got obsessed with all that stuff. Grindcore came out, and I got obsessed with that. The second wave of black metal came out, and then I was obsessed with that. So, you know, I went through all these phases as a metalhead, and every single one of them has influenced me in one way or another, and I still, you know, cling tenaciously to those albums that I grew up listening to. I still listen to them today, and, you know, every now and again, I'll write an Iron Flame riff, and I'll be like, yeah, that sounds like an old Swedish death metal riff, you know, at
right.
its core. I could hear some old Swedish death metal in there, you know, so it's all, everything influences me. I don't let anything not influence me.
Sure. And I'll be honest, dude, I honestly think that people are so willing to put a label on everything that they've forgotten to be a fan. They've forgotten how to be a fan.
Absolutely.
Because too many metalheads will be like, well, I can't listen to that because it's black metal or it's rap metal or it's new metal. And it's like, wait a minute, you're missing out on so many riffs and so many ideas.
Right.
You miss so much of what metal is, no?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe I'll lose some metal credits here by saying this, but that transcends even the realm of metal. You know, I've always felt like there's good music and then there's everything else, you know. It doesn't matter what genre it is. I love 70s funk, man. I love classic rock. I love 80s hits, you know. I like a lot of different genres of music, and I pull things from all of those places. I think, again, if you like it, it's having an impact on you, and it's going to influence you whether you want it to or not. So why not? And you're right. I think that, you know, metal is so broad spectrum too. It's got so many genres, and they're all fantastic in their own right, I think. But You know, it should unite us, but instead, a lot of times it tends to divide us, and we break off into these tight little circles. And, well, you know, this isn't true enough, or this isn't grim enough, or it's not brutal enough. Right. You know, they use these adjectives to kind of box themselves out of other genres for one reason or another. And I've never really understood that. You know, I'll wear a black metal shirt today. I'll wear a death metal shirt tomorrow. You know, I'll wear whatever I want, man. I like what I like. And, you know, I've never felt like I fit into one circle, as it were.
Right on, man. Well, dude, obviously, man, let's get into the record that we are here to talk about. We'll get into that genre for a couple of minutes. Tell me about Where Madness Dwells, man. It's a great record. It's definitely very traditional. If you like Iron Maiden, there's no reason you're not listening to this record. So why don't you tell people about this record and about, you know, the development of this one from the last one?
It's definitely, it's different than all of them in the respect that I guess I want to call it more serious. And it's really because I never really, Iron Flame has always been fun for me. And lyric writing has always been admittedly a bit of a chore. Like I hate the act of sitting down and having to write lyrics. It's too much pressure. I overanalyze. And so normally up until now, 90% of the time with an Iron Flame album, I would just play the music, sit down with it, and I would commit to like pretty much the first thing that came to my head when I was writing and recording the vocals in real time. So I never really sat down and wrote them out. I just came up with them like that, and that's what it ended up being. So just to take the pressure off myself. This time it was a lot different because, well, there were a lot of different events going on around me at the time besides the pandemic that everybody else was dealing with. I lost my best friend and business partner to cancer right at the beginning of 2020. And, he's been my best friend for years, and we owned a business together. His business that he started now became my business, and all of his responsibilities kind of fell on my shoulders at that point, in addition to having to, you know, grieve his passing. The world was kind of in chaos at the same time. It just coincided with the pandemic and the whole world like kind of screeching to a halt. So to me, so much of my life had changed at once. It was madness. And I was looking around me and seeing nothing but madness around me. So the lyrical concept is really just a reflection of what I saw going on around me in different forms. And if you try and dissect the lyrics, it's very allegorical. It's not very plain speak. Like, this is what's going on in my life right now. It's all very metaphorical. You really have to kind of dissect the lyrics to figure out what was going on there. But the overall theme from song to song is madness in one form or another. I think that's the biggest difference in between the other albums, aside from the way I approached the songwriting was a little different. If you know anything about the back catalog, the other albums really, the other songs really rely on guitar harmonies and hooks, and everything kind of revolves around those hooks. And this time around, I kind of rearranged things and made it rely less on the hooks and concentrated more on actual riff writing and song structuring, as opposed to, you know, everything revolving around those hooks. And I think the songwriting is stronger because of it. But I was a little worried. I was a little worried both lyrically and musically that people that like the old stuff might not like this one because it was maybe too much of a shift. But now that the reviews are starting to come in, I'm feeling a little bit better about it.
Cool.
So you were speaking about, I read something about approaching it, writing like from the perspective of a fan, of a metal fan. Is that what you did on this one also?
Yeah, and I think that I always do that. I critically look at my own music as a fan because I know what excites me as a metal fan, and I know what bores me as a metal fan or a music fan. And I'm constantly thinking, is this going to make the listener push stop, or is this going to make the listener skip to the next track? I obsess over album flow in particular. I think The flow of an album can make or break an album. And I think it does make or break an album because in my own experiences, you know, I've listened to albums that are like, man, if these songs were rearranged, like this would be such a better listen or this would have grabbed me right off the bat. But it took me 3 months to get to the seventh or eighth song before I realized how great this album really was. So I those things are constantly in the back of my mind when I'm writing music. So when I sit down with the collection of songs that end up being recorded, I really, really get OCD about what order they should be in. This one is a little bit different in the respect that it's not really a concept album. The concept is Madness, but nothing happens like really chronologically per se. But like the first song basically kind of drops you off in hell and kind of never comes back to pick you up. So I wanted to kind of say that right off the beginning of the album.
You did.
Welcome to hell. You're stuck. You're fucked. Have fun. You know, I kind of wanted to say that on the first track, and that's why Everlasting Fire had to be the first track because that's what it says. You know, the last song on the album is the title track, and it kind of summarizes, you know, everything that's going on relating to Madness. So again, it could only be the last song. So yeah, I think a lot about song flow more than anything. I wish more bands would.
Amen.
Well, you know what was cool is that when I was listening to it, when Chris gifted me this album, and I sat with it and I just listened to it, and I was just like, man, it really took me back. It took me back to those days of Iron Maiden. It took me back to that time. I'm a very visual person, so I was back there again, and I was just like, man, nice. I want to let you know something. It's just a statement of mine. I believe that you are so in the pocket with your singing. Amazing. I love it. I was just like, you had me. And then your bandmates, they're in the pocket also. So the orchestration, man, you guys are just – it's just – together so well. I was just like, man, I am enjoying this so much.
Well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate that. And I know the feeling that you're talking about. And that's why I listen to music. I want to be sucked back into that time when I was a teenager and metal was new and fresh and wonderful. And there are still new bands and new albums that make me feel that way. So, you know, I know it still exists. I know that feeling can still be conjured 30 years after being a metal fan, you know, listening to metal for the first time, you know, and I know that could still happen. So to hear it from someone I don't know, to say that I, you know, evoked that feeling in you is the highest compliment that I could ever receive, man. Yeah, so thank you, Lord. I appreciate it.
Definitely right beautiful job, bro. Beautiful
thank you
job.
Very much.
Right on. Well, Andrew, I do have to ask you, I know the bio says, and we're talking about influences and old school, and Iron Maiden's coming up a lot, you know, which it's very obvious. Iron Maiden is there.
It was the first,
you know, but the bio says Dickinson, and I hear that. I mean, I certainly can hear that on some level. More to the fact, though, for me, listening to it and going back and listening to some of your older catalog, I think you're worshiping at the altar of Steve Harris. I mean, just the rhythms to this are, you know, you pull a song like Under the Spell as an example, very gallopy, very Maiden-esque, very Can I Play with Madness era sound. So how important is Steve Harris, maybe not as a player, but as a writer and a composer to you?
Well, I mean, he was he's not the sole songwriter in Iron Maiden, but he probably is the most prolific songwriter in the band. So, and, you know, for Iron Maiden, my love for Iron Maiden is, you know, the vocals are only this much of it, you know, the music is the entirety of it. And, you know, whether I, as much as I loved Dickinson or Deanna's vocals, if the music wasn't there to keep me listening, then it's all for naught. Like the music is just as important, if not more important, with Maiden as far as my love goes. You know, they were the ones that made me fall in love with and actually kind of normalize guitar harmonies, you know. From that point on, they kind of spoiled it for every other band, because if there weren't, you know, awesome, intelligent guitar harmonies going on, I was like, well, what's this got to offer? Of all the genres of music that I like, the one like common thread that has to run through it is melody and or harmony. I think it all kind of revolves around that. And if it doesn't have that, then I'm out the door, man. I'm moving on to something else. And they have always just always prioritized that. Steve in general has always prioritized that. Steve has always, what has amazed me constantly over the years with Steve is his ability to take song structures that he's done again and again and again and again and again, and somehow make them fresh and not stale each time. I from a musician standpoint, I could sit back and listen. I'd be like, yeah, I know in my mind exactly where these riffs are being played. Like, I don't need to sit down with a guitar to know where these riffs are, but it doesn't sound like Number of the Beast part 21, right? You know, somehow it just sounds fresh and it sounds innovative and new again every single time, and I still get that same like feeling every time. He knows what buttons to push on my soul, at least,
right?
To create that feeling every single time. And that I think is probably one of the hardest things to do as a songwriter, is to keep the identity of your band going for decades at a time and still create something fresh every time.
Right on.
Really challenging.
Sure. It is, man. Well, and Andrew, I'm always curious for bands that play traditional metal, like you're doing here with Iron Flame. The hardest thing I think you have to overcome is that it's not trendy anymore here in the States.
Very much.
So with that said, how do you find an audience for it? Because it's just not, you know, you would do much better if you were doing screamo or cry metal or whatever they're calling that today, you know, but that's not what you want to do. You know, you're focusing more on what you want to do versus what the masses are looking for. So where do you look to find the audience?
Well, number one, I'm saying right now that I'm going to take and steal the term cry metal, and I'm going to be using it for the rest of my life. So thank you very much for that. I'll always give you credit for it, but I'm going to take it and use it forever. I've been playing live music in the States in one form or another in different bands for, my entire adult life. So I've seen it ebb and flow, and I've seen it rise and fall. And yeah, you're right. Traditional heavy metal has been, I don't want to say a bad word for a very long time here. It just hasn't been a very cool word for a very long time here. But I will say, since Iron Flame's inception in 2016, that it has begun to rise again in popularity. It hasn't peaked yet. I don't even think it's even close. The main difference between here and European markets, Japanese markets, and just markets outside of the U.S. is trendiness. Things just aren't as trendy over there. A trend will come along and they'll take it and they'll embrace it and it'll just stay. Like, it won't rise and fall. It's up there with every other thing that they love, and they love it equally and unconditionally. And it's a big difference from over here. When you go over there and you see shows and you play shows, like, the appreciation factor and the loyalty is just insane over there. It's never waned over there. Sure. When heavy metal was at its peak here in, like, you know, 83 to 88, we'll say, it's like frozen in time over there. It's still just as big over there as it was here back then. So here, that's the thing, is just things rise and fall, and there's a lot more trends, and people that are into certain types of metal won't go to a heavy metal show if they're into black metal, or vice versa, to where it's a lot more broad spectrum over there. But I will say that just from the few festivals that we have played in the past few years here, the appreciation and the following is growing again here. And I clearly couldn't be happier about that. Again, I think it's going to take a few more years for it to reach a peak here, but it's definitely back in a big way, and it's definitely growing. It's still growing.
No, that's awesome. You are right about, you know, overseas, man, the way that they embrace you and they love it and they show that love. You know, sometimes here in the States, it's just like, you know, show me what you got. Show me what's new. You know,
right.
So I would like to say this, though, or ask you, you are like, did I read this correctly that you do all the production and the music? Are you like Prince? Are you like Prince? I mean, seriously, do you do everything? Do you write and play all those instruments?
Yeah, beyond the records, I do all the instrumentation aside from the guitar solos, because I am not a guitar solo guitar player. I can't do that to save my life. Luckily, I have very talented friends who can, so I rely on them. But yeah, all the music and all the drums, the bass, the rhythm guitars are all recorded by me. We're sitting in my basement home studio right now, and this is where everything gets created. And it's purely just out of, efficiency, and it's not because I'm a control freak or anything like that. It just, when inspiration hits, and it's just easier for me to flesh out these songs start to finish, beginning to end, and then hand it to my live lineup band members and say, here's some songs, let's learn them, and then we flesh them out in real life in the rehearsal room and then go out and play them. It's kind of more time efficient that way. We could definitely do it the other way, because the musicians that play in the live lineup of Iron Flame are 1,000 times better musicians than I could ever be. But if we did it that way, and I wrote the songs or demoed the songs and then handed it to them, and then we went into the rehearsal room and got all the screws tightened down and then went back into the studio and recorded it for real again, it would just add probably another 9 months onto the process of creating and recording an album. And why, you know, the only thing I am a kind of a control freak about is putting out music somewhat consistently and not sitting on my rump for too long with one album before I present another album.
Love. Right on. Love. Right on, man. Well, dude, I did want to ask you about black metal for a second here. And I'm going to make a statement. You can tell me I'm full of shit and that's fine. But the last 5 or 6 years for me anyway, watching it, and I can't play anything, but watching it, black metal to me has become very much a parody of itself. And I think that because of two reasons. Number one, all of the new bands that are coming out are almost cosplaying black metal. They want to look the part, but they don't sound the part. They don't have the passion or the anger or whatever it is that makes black metal work. Yeah. That's the first piece. And then the other piece to me is the media attention that movies like Lords of Chaos, as an example, got, gives this ridiculous, false, well, we're going to kill everybody and we're going to take a piece of their skull and that's going to make us fierce. And, you know, it presents this ridiculous false narrative to where now black metal, what it was, which was that escapism from death metal without escaping the heavy, has now become this clown show of sorts for a lot of bands. And I know I'm saying a lot of shitty things, but
no,
let me ask it another way. How do you see the scene today? And do you see it as serious as, I don't know, the days when we first got Cradle of Filth and Borknagar and those types of bands when they came out?
Well, don't take my opinion as 100% valid, because admittedly, I do not have my finger on the pulse of what comes out year to year. I rely on friends to turn me on to bands. I'm woefully inept at, keeping up with all the music that's constantly coming out. Right. And admittedly, with black metal too, all those genres that I worshipped back in the day, I still do. But I cling tenaciously to those old albums. And I'm not really hip. Like, I heard the new Cradle of Filth like a month ago or something, and it's like a really cool return to form. Yeah. But, you know, and the things you're talking about with, like Lords of Chaos was a movie that is you know, a outside observationalist kind of dramatic movie loosely based on real events that actually happened, what, 30 years ago, you know? So we're talking about, you know, that movie in particular is talking about what I consider the second wave of black metal, which is the wave that I grew up with and liked, but I never really cared about like a lot of those kind of bands, like Burzum. I was never a Burzum fan. I was never a Mayhem fan.
Right.
I liked Dark Throne when they were a death metal band. I liked Dark Throne. I liked Dark Throne's first album. You know, I really like that. But when I really like certain black metal bands. Let's put it that way. Well, you said Borknagar, like, you know, the first handful of Borknagar albums I loved. Early Dimmu Borgir albums I loved. I was particularly a fan of the more melodic and the more, I want to say pagan or folk style of black metal, like Ulver, the first few Ulver albums, Worship That. The first handful of Abigor albums. I don't know if you ever heard of a band called Abigor from Austria, but they're probably my all-time favorite black metal band.
Okay.
Dive into their early stuff, and it's all Maiden-style harmonies just put to polka beats and shrieking vocals. My scope on black metal, I guess you definitely can't take it as, you know, super valid. And really, when you think about it, at least back then, I remember, you know, friends of mine that weren't into black metal when I was getting into it, and I was, you know, low key trying to turn my friends onto a couple of bands. They were just like, but this is kind of a joke, right? Like, like you just said, it's like, it's kind of a parody of itself, right? Look, they got Kiss makeup on and they're in the woods and they're holding up, you know, swords, and you know, they're howling at the moon. Like, what is that? You know, I mean, it's kind of from an outside perspective, could have always been perceived as a parody of itself, I guess. I don't know. And then there's a lot of, you know, bands that are considered black metal that don't have any of the imagery. They don't sing about any of the common themes. And I think that black metal, the one thing I have noticed about more modern black metal is that it's really shed its skin as far as its own limitations go, to where it's not just inverted guitar chords being tremolo picked and those polka beats nonstop for 3 to 5 minutes and either talking about Satan or nature, you know. It's evolved into these more philosophical, lyrical themes. The music has gotten a lot more, I don't want to say intelligent, I think it's just got more substance, and it goes different places that it never did before. It's just like any other genre, I guess. Once it sticks around long enough, it just starts to kind of grow and evolve.
Right on.
There's things I like about old black metal and new black metal.
Cool.
Well, watching, once again, paying attention to Iron Flames and seeing what was going on. You guys were doing a show in Berlin, so I was watching the show. And if I believe it was Berlin.
Somewhere in Germany, I'm sure, but we've never played Berlin.
I watched the show, and do you have a song called Marching?
Marching On.
Marching On.
Yes.
Let me go ahead and tell you that it's a great song, and I enjoyed every single second of listening to that song. And it just, once again, it just drew me in, and I just liked the way that you were, you know, interacting with the crowd. It was good. They were into it, you know, once again. Europeans, they were really into what you were doing. So do you enjoy playing those more intimate shows, or do you enjoy the bigger festivals?
Well, that show that you probably watched was probably Keep It True, which is a festival in Germany. And that was definitely the largest crowd that I personally have ever played in front of. I don't know how many people, but it was a couple of thousand people. And, you know, I've never played in front of that many people before. It was a little intimidating. The way I've always felt is a show is a show is a show. And it doesn't matter if there's two people and a dog, or if there's 2,000 people in front of me. I feel it's my duty to deliver the same performance every single time. You know, if somebody's taking the time to stand in front of me and watch me perform, then I'm going to give it 110% every single time, no matter what. And it's something that I really even can't help, man. It's the love and the fire inside me that burns for metal, that makes me perform the way that I do. I can't help it. Like, it wouldn't matter if I was sick or in a bad mood or if I was on top of the world. Like, I do the same thing on stage no matter what, because I'm possessed by the spirit of metal. That's what it does to me, and I just can't help myself. You know, a lot of people will say, man, this song, you know, you did this, or you said that, and you're like, I really don't remember that. Because I'm kind of in the zone. I'm in the metal zone, man, and I'm not really conscious of what's going on.
You know? All right, but
with those European festivals, you're right, it's really easy to get that crowd interaction because they're there and they want it. They're dying for it. They just want you to reach out your hands so they can reach back, man. That's all they want. And a song like Marching On is perfect for that crowd and that scene because it's anthemic. You know, it's you're rising up the troops. You know, you're getting people excited, and it's something that it's something that's easy to remember. It's repetitive. You can get people to raise their fist and chant to it, and that's what people want to do. They want to forget about their lives for a while, and they want to feel like the crowd of people that's surrounding them are all on the same page and they're there for the same purpose and they're all feeling the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Great job.
Thanks. Absolutely. Well, dude, there's no way to not feel it if people check out the brand new release from Iron Flame. It is called Where Madness Dwells. It's out on July the 1st. People should be ordering it now. Where should we send people to order it now, to pre-order it?
And I think you can pre-order it on High Roller Records website, which is highrollerrecords.d. In the States, if you don't want to pay for the overseas shipping, when it comes out, we will have it in hand the day of the release, and it will be available on our Bandcamp page, which is ironflame.bandcamp.com, and you can order it from there.
All right, and buy it on a Friday so they don't pay any fees.
Ooh, bonus.
There you go. Well, one more time, the album is called Where Madness Dwells. It's out July 1st. It is Iron Flame. And Andrew, thanks so much for joining us here on Crusaker Presents.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you so much.
Okay, metalheads, you've been complaining that there has not been a channel that plays all of the heavy metal videos from past, present, and future for years and years at this point. Well, that time is over. Heavy Metal Television is back. HeavyMetalTelevision.net is the website. Go there. You can see videos playing 24/7, 365, all the time, all the best from the old school, the new school, and everything in between. Check it out, HeavyMetalTelevision.net. It is where the metal is.